Hello and good morning, and welcome to the Comics Experience Graphic Novel of the Month Club for the month of April. And we've got a really fun book this time. It's we don't do a lot of these, but it's a romance, and it's very cartoony in a good way. And I really really liked it a lot. And the book is, well, you can see it behind me too, but the book is Belle of the Ball, and we're joined by the cartoonist Mary Costa. Hello, Mary.
Hi,
how are you?
Hi, I'm all right. I should say good morning. I'm assuming most people who are watching this are in the morning, but I'm in the UK, so it's actually 6 p.m.
Okay.
So good evening to you. Yeah, good evening to whoever is out here with me.
Uh-huh. I thought that you, when I scheduled this, I thought you were in Brazil for some reason.
I am originally Brazilian, but we moved out a few years back.
Very good. Very good. Loving the UK. All right. Well, hey, welcome. And I just want to tell you, I really like this book a lot. The staff, all of my staff at the store really like the book a lot. There's not a lot of, sort of fun, bubbly romantic comics that come out, and so that's a really great it's a really great thing to have.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely I read a lot of comics, obviously, and I definitely noticed that gap in the market, especially for lesbians, because it does seem to skew a little, especially young adult lesbians and like teen-oriented LGBT stories, where it skews a little bit towards like the trauma aspect of it. And I like trauma. I like characters to suffer. But honestly, I just wanted to put my silly little dolls around and like make them kiss. And I was allowed to do that, so I'm very grateful.
Yeah, excellent. No, that's great. Well, so let me, I always have a format on these things. I always start now with the same questions because I really like both of these questions. And the starting question is this: why comics? Of all the things that you could be doing in your life, why work on comics? Comics are labor intensive. Comics are solitary. And comics, you know, don't necessarily make you incredibly wealthy. What causes your passion for the form of comics?
You're really selling the job of being a comic artist, I feel. I feel like this is kind of not a universal experience, but a very common experience, which is I discovered manga at a very early age in my life. And my dream when I was 6 to 12 years old was that I was going to go to Japan and I was going to become a mangaka. Wow. That did not happen, uh-huh, clearly. Uh-huh. I don't know enough Japanese to do it. I realize that like labor is extremely intense, even more intensive than anything you could possibly imagine in like Western publishing. And also, I don't know, I could never get the manga style down, honestly. But it really like drove me to want to do sequential storytelling. I've always really wanted to tell stories. That's always been something that like I've always, when I was growing up, my favorite thing as a child was my parents would make up stories for me at bedtime. They wouldn't read anything. They would just be like, once upon a time. And then they just kind of like,
go for Mad
Libs it out.
Yeah.
So I've always really liked inventing stories. And at first I really wanted to be a writer. I really wanted to do prose. And then I realized that describing backgrounds is really, really hard.
Yeah.
And drawing them isn't as hard actually as describing them, is what I found. And my favorite part of writing prose has always been the dialogue. And I feel like you can convey just a lot more emotion when you have the characters actually drawn out and doing their little micro expressions. Everything about comics as a medium for, as like a vehicle for telling stories was what appealed to me about it. Not so much like the artistry, like I love the artistry of it, but I don't consider myself one of the people who like really gets creative with my layouts and stuff like that.
Right.
Comics are a very, I mean, yeah, I work hard on them, but like, you know, there's people who like do just insane stuff to their page sure. layouts.
Sure, sure,
and
sure, sure.
Yeah, I feel like to me, comics are a very utilitarian way to get stories out as quickly as possible and like in the most fun way to me as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that. You said that as early as six, you wanted to well, move to Japan specifically, not just make comics, but like move to Japan and make, make manga.
Yeah.
There.
I specifically wanted to be a mangaka. I wanted to be Mari Sensei, and be, and make my little comic about, a super original magical girl who, was not like the other girls and who like had a crush on a boy. You know, the kind of stuff that I was reading, which was just shoujo, magic girl manga.
And were you, so did you like start drawing your own comics then at that young?
I definitely started copying the styles of what I saw. The reason I started drawing, properly was I've always been into fashion and I really wanted to be a fashion designer. So I would spend when I would visit my grandma in Portugal, I would spend like the whole day just like with pen and paper, just like styling out the most Y2K outfits you could possibly imagine. Just like just being like, I'm a genius. I'm going to do this for a living. But, you know, that didn't pan out. But yeah, that was, I think, the inciting incident for me to start drawing. And then the manga was just like, oh, this is what I want to do. Like, I would like to take these people that I'm drawing, because I've mostly just been drawing people, and I want to put them in places and I want them to convey, like, stories. I dabbled a little bit in fan fiction. Do not look it up. I found out that, like, I actually preferred like drawing out what I wanted to see in fan fiction. Mm-hmm. So I did like a few fan comics of things, and fan art of like properties that I liked. And it just kind of snowballed from there.
Yeah. Did you study art at all? Or are you self-taught? Where's your background there?
So not for comics. I was already doing graphic novels, way before I was in uni. I had it in my mind for a really long time when I was leaving high school and I needed to pick a degree, that if I decided to do comics as a job, like as a full occupation, I would lose my spark. I just wouldn't find it fun anymore. And that's not true, because I'm currently doing comics right now. But like, as soon as this call ends, I'm just going to start drawing comics again.
Nice.
But I had a stint with translation studies. I never finished that degree. But I was already doing my own comic, my web comic on the side called Perry Tale, which is on a very prolonged hiatus because it's hard out here. And, you know, I have other things. I already had like the experience with doing comics. I was already really comfortable with doing sequential art, but I applied to a school, called the Animation Workshop in Denmark. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. It has three different branches of it. So it has three different courses that you can take. One of them is, CG arts, which is, modeling, painting, et cetera, for like CG movies. One of them is character animation. The other one is sequential arts, which is like graphic storytelling.
Yeah.
And I went into character animation because I really wanted to learn how to animate. So I do have an art background. I have a degree, I have a bachelor's degree in character animation, but I was already doing comics. If anything, character animation just really helped me solidify my drawing. It really helped me make my character design more consistent. Mm-hmm. It helped me like cut a lot of corners as far as like drawing characters in a more like streamlined way. It helped me with poses a lot because it made me go leave my comfort zone, because I had to animate all these like crazy little poses. And I would do it all over again if I had to. I loved being in the animation workshop. And because I am like European, I'm half Portuguese, it was basically free. So why not?
Nice.
Like
nice.
There's no Good. Other place that I would have been able to like have the resources to learn animation as opposed to comics, which is, I feel, something that you can do on your own. Like you can self-teach Sure. yourself comics very easily. Animation is something that has a little bit of a higher barrier to entry.
Yeah.
So I really appreciated having that structure to
Yeah.
convince me to animate.
I agree with you that anyone can do comics. I think where the formal training comes in, if you're learning either comics or, as you're saying, animation, is staging, is gesture, is
Absolutely.
Facial expression, you know, action reaction, you know, like those are things that you can do those things independently, but learning the basics helps, I think. Mm. Broadly.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like even if it's just a free online course, or just like there's a million YouTube tutorials of like how to draw this and this and that, yeah. or even just like going on, I forget the name of the website, but there's a website where it's just a bunch of timed life drawing poses. Just doing that really improves the way that you can draw. Like just drawing a lot will make Sure. you better at drawing. Who would have possibly figured?
No, it's 100% correct. It's 100% correct. So when you were doing webcomics, and are still doing webcomics? Yes.
I would like to get back to it. Right now I'm really focusing on the next project that I have for First Second, which is it's called Forgive Me Not so far. I'm not sure if they're gonna change the title. Bell of the Ball was actually called just Bell for a really long time. Okay. And then they were like, there's like a million things that are called Bell. This is not going to hold up.
There's actually quite a lot of books called Bell of the Ball as well.
Yes.
Honestly,
yes,
when I was looking something up, I was like, wait, yeah. I don't want those. I want this one. I had to put your name in it in order to get the right one.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Every time I go on Goodreads, because I love to look at reviews of my own book, obviously, I have to type in my own name instead of the name of the book, because there's like a million romance novels called Bell of the Ball.
Sure.
But
okay. So anyway, so what the question was though is, you're doing those web comics for free, and it's a different structure than a book. Is you know, because you're publishing on a regular, steady drip basis of like small things rather than here's 200 pages of story.
It's actually 300. So
300 pages. Sorry, I could have looked. I don't mean to minimize the accomplishment. is for you, is there a difference in how you approach work between something that's being serialized in a free-form way versus something that you've signed a contract that you've got to do X, Y, and Z? Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's not even the contract aspect of it. It's just the fact that you need to have it planned out from beginning to end that I like so much. Like, were I to do another webcomic, which like is absolutely in the cards, I do not want it to be like having to update like once or twice a week kind of stresses me out. Having to like have a buffer where you like create a certain amount of pages each week or each month. Like things happen, life happens. Sure. I would much rather, and I've spoken about this with the Hiveworks editors, which is that's where my webcomics are published, that if I were I to come back to webcomics, I would much prefer it if I could, and this is how I've described it, if I could just like hole myself in a cave for like a year and come back with like a completely finished comic, and then I would publish it for free still at like a drip fed rate of like one to two pages per week, but I would not be held to that standard of having to like actually make those pages every single week and have to keep on top of that. So in that sense, having one big book that's ready to go is like, it's a lot more stress-free for me. It's a lot more freeing. Though, of course, in webcomics, because nobody's paying me, I don't have to go through like 3 to 4 rounds of copy edits where I have to erase like 6 lines on a panel because someone was like, no, that can't be there. It tarnishes the art, which is something that like, I really like seeing flaws in comics. That's why I like webcomics so much. I really like the progression, especially of the artwork. Like seeing people who have done comics for years and years and years and seeing like how their art has improved. I'm very against people redrawing initial chapters for print versions.
Sure.
Because I just really like seeing the progression.
The development, Yeah.
Absolutely. And also I think that like if you have that energy, you can just start making more stuff.
Yeah, no, I understand the logic of all of that. There's also the structural part of it, right? That, you know, a story like Belle perforce has to have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it has to be within a unit that's that big. With a webcomic, though, you don't necessarily have to engage in that. And I'm assuming with your earlier ones, you were basically making it up more or less as you went along.
Yeah, I mean, Perry Tale definitely has a very clearly defined beginning, middle, and end. It's the things that happen in between that were really tripping me up. Like because it was supposed to be so long and it was supposed to be like such an epic journey. I just started being like, what if I change this? And like, what if I, and because like, I didn't have any editors to like, tell me like, no, just keep going. I was just like, what if I added like a mini boss, like alongside the like main boss, and they didn't have any motivation. And now I need to think of a motivation for like a villain that didn't exist for a while. And then I draw that villain and they immediately become a fan favorite. So I need to do them justice. And I have to be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. This character was nothing like a week ago. I just came up with them.
Yeah. That's funny. So are you, cause you sounded almost like you were bitching at the beginning there, but, did you enjoy the editorial process on Belle? Like having someone to bounce ideas off of? And
I mean, the parts where it's like, where you have to like, just go over and over and over it again, it's obviously annoying. Like nobody likes going like, no, people, sometimes I'm just like, oh, it's done. Just put it out. Like the part of publishing that's like, oh, you finished your comic. You have to wait a year and a half for us to do marketing and then it'll come back. That's my least favorite part of publishing. But I am extremely grateful for my editor. I really liked having the direction. My editor was Steve Fox. I'm not sure if I feel like he's done stuff for like Cape Comics, but I don't really follow Cape Comics very much because there's so many of them. But he's both extremely like helpful and also like just hands off enough that I'm like, this is exactly what I want. Like if he gives me a suggestion and I'm like, I don't want to do that. He's like, that's totally fine. Which is like a perfect marriage of like having some sort of editorial and also like letting me do what I want. I really do enjoy editorial. I really like having like something on rails. And that's why like the webcomic just kind of didn't pan out super great for me because like it went off the rails so easily because I kept adding and adding and adding stuff. But even still, if I were offered an editor for Perry Tale, I'd be like, it would need to be like someone who really understood the vision because again, it's something that I'm doing essentially for free, that I'm posting online.
And doing it the traditional way where you're drawing, where you're posting the pages nearly as fast as you're making them. Not quite, because as you say, you want to have a buffer. Editors become much harder in an environment like that because you know, it's like Chekhov's gun, right? Like once you put the gun in the scene, the gun has to go off at some point.
Yeah, but exactly.
Right? Like you have once you create that villain, it's too late to have editorial input at that point, in a way.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Like if someone were to be like, oh, maybe you shouldn't have done this in like this initial part of the story, right. I would be like, maybe
but I did it.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I shouldn't have. Yeah. That's a problem that cannot be solved. So I need to just make the most of it. Like the amount of continuity things that I just have to be like, don't worry.
Oh, that's funny. No, I that's really funny. I like that a lot. So where did Belle in particular come from? What was the origin of the story?
So I really like character, like mascot characters. Like I really like the appeal of like having someone who like hides their identity. And that was originally a much bigger part of Belle when I was originally coming up with these concepts for the characters, is that like and like Belle, the character Hawkins, she still likes to hide away quite a bit. But like when I was coming up with these characters, which was like, we were on a road trip to Spain with my parents and I only had like a little sketchbook to draw in. And I was like, okay. I want to draw, a mascot character who like falls in love with the jock. Like, I think that would be really cute. And then I was like, and I also want like a cheerleader love triangle. Like that was essentially the prompt. I was like, I want these three very specific tropey characters. And I'm just going to start drawing them and see what happens. And what happened was the internet, especially Instagram for some reason, went absolutely bananas for these characters. And I was like, oh, wow, I think I might have something that like really resonates with people here. So I started like developing them more and like making them less one note. And I eventually ended up putting a lot of myself in the story when I had to like actually write it, and when I had to like pitch it to First Second and to other publishing houses. So like it really grew from essentially kind of a silly one-off like doodle of like extremely tropey characters. That like were a lot of fun.
You just posted on Insta or Tumblr or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think like there's also like they have like really contrasting designs that people really like. Like I feel like I've spoken about this in like a written interview. Sorry, it's raining a lot. I don't know if you can hear it, but
no, I can't.
Okay, excellent. but another interview that I did, a written one, I talk about how like subconsciously they are very, the very basic principles of character design are those characters. Like Hawkins is a triangle. She's like kind of angular and like a little bit unstable. Right. Gina is like a circle. She's like bubbly and bouncy. And like, you know, that kind of stuff, and gregarious. And Chloe is a square. She's like very stern and very like blocky. And that was completely just like subconsciously, like I need, like, these are the archetypal, like three principles of character design in the three archetypal tropes. Like the only thing people kept saying, like, where's the goth? And I'm like, I don't want there to be a goth. Don't ask me about a goth.
That's funny. I also think that they work really well in silhouette, which I've always heard is one of the rules of character design.
Yeah, that is
for animation, is that you can immediately identify the character head, you know, just from how it looks in silhouette. So
yeah, especially in comics, because you have to do a lot of shots where they're very far away. You just do like dot eyes and a little mouth. If they look too similar, it's like, who is this character? So having them be very distinctly their own shape in terms of body really helps with like distinguishing which character is which.
And so taking them from being a doodle to being a pitch, not yet a comic, what was your process there? Is it more and more and more doodles until you figure it out, or are you starting to write at that point?
No, it was mostly doodles of like little scenes that I kind of wanted to play out. And also, like, I drew a lot of AUs of them, like, in different scenarios. Like, there was a mermaid one. There was a Howl's Moving Castle AU at some point. There was in a brief time when I drew them in the houses of the, like, magic school that shan't be named. It really helped me figure out the dynamics that they had with each other, like how they acted around each other as well, because Belle of the Ball isn't so much a story about like a journey or like some sort of epic event. It's a story about three characters interacting with each other, and that's the most important part, is like how they fit, how they mesh together, and like the chemistry has to propel it enough that people want to read about them. So that was the most important part to me. And then, yeah, I did draw quite a few like little scenes that I kind of wanted to happen potentially if there was a comic. One of them was like Hawkins and Chloe at the dance with like Hawkins in her big clunky mascot suit and Chloe like making fun of her, but like a little bit flirting. And like that was something that I really, really wanted. And I only really started writing once my agent was like, yeah, if you want to pitch this to like a publishing house, you need like an outline for them to know what the story is. And I was like, okay, give me like 3 days. And I just like banged out like an outline of what I wanted it to be. And then it went through a couple edits with Steve once it got picked up. But it didn't change a whole lot. Most of the stuff was just like giving both Chloe and Regina more like screen time and more personality, because it was very Hawkins focused at first.
Right.
Which makes it, because she's the protagonist, essentially.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And also, you know, the mascot character, I mean, that's such a cute thing. And I don't know that I can really think of any other comics that have ever done that as a protagonist.
Not as a protagonist. The main inspiration for this was in Cardcaptor Sakura, we're getting back to manga, Sakura's brother, Toya, he has a lot of like part-time jobs, like mystery jobs that he just like gets every once in a while. That's his gag, essentially, in the comics and in the TV show. And a lot of them involve him just being like a mascot who greets people, and like nobody knows that it's him until he starts like messing with Sakura. And I always found that really cute. I always really liked it, like that people have like this kind of like, you know, I don't want to say it's like a fursuit, but it's a fursuit, and it's like you can kind of just be more of yourself if you have like a mask.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I liked it quite a bit, and I thought it was a really logical way to build that romantic triangle that I've never encountered that at all. So you actually came up with an original idea here, I think. And I say that because a lot of people don't, right? You know, most of the comics out there are not like actually an original idea, you know? It's so I find that really cool.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I don't know. I never really thought about it like that. I was just like, oh, I really like mascot characters. I really want a mascot character. Like most of my stories are, I really like this. I really want this. And it's very funny that you say that it's an original idea, because Belle of the Ball isn't a specific example of this. I can't think of anything specifically that I've like just completely stolen, because Toya and Hawkins are like completely different characters. Like the dynamic is literally just like, I wanted a mascot. But a lot of my story ideas are born from, I watched a piece of media and I liked it, but I didn't like it enough. And I was like, I would like to make this my this way.
I'm assuming that the lesbian aspect of it has always been part of the basic DNA, or okay. And do you want to talk about your reasoning for doing that?
I am a lesbian and I like drawing girls.
Very good. That was an oddly phrased question. I'm sorry. I mean it right, because it's a challenge sometimes, particularly in America today. In fact, I sent a copy of this book to a new subscriber to the club. This is the first time this has happened in 9 years now, and through almost 1,000 subscribers. I sent a copy of this book, and they sent it back with a note that's like, you really shouldn't put out that kind of material in the mail. And I was like, what? Like, I couldn't believe that was the reaction I got. But that is the reaction, right, that is happening in the world today sometimes. So that was the context in which I was asking.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, that was, yeah. Like, I totally get it. It really is just the circles that I am in. I am very lucky to not, like, I know that everyone is like, Twitter is a hellscape and everyone is always talking about politics. My Twitter is just like gay people talking to each other. So it was very much a no-brainer that, like, if I want, especially romance, oh, I've made these new characters that are like in love with each other. Obviously, right. They're gay in some flavor. Right. I very rarely make heterosexual relationships. I feel like the world has a lot of them. I don't know. It's just something that, like, also really, like, the format of the story is very high school drama. And that was one of my favorite genres growing up. And I think I would have, like, just gone feral at the thought of, like, there being, like, just lesbians being, like, in a completely normal high school drama. So it was also, like, just to have that. And honestly, when people are, like, because I've gotten, like, I have had my stuff end up, like, on the wrong side of, like, social media. And people are, like, oh, my God. I can't believe that you're drawing Sin. That's just funny. It doesn't hurt me in any way. Like, nobody, like, I've had quite a charmed-ish life in terms of, like, being gay. Like, I've never had any violence dealt towards me aside from, like, people saying mean things and, like, right. people who don't know that I'm gay just making offhand comments and me being like, I'm not engaging in this conversation. So, like, it's not something that I was ever afraid of putting out. It's just one of those things where it's like, I know that this has an audience because I make content for that audience every single day of my life, and I consume that content also every single day of my life. So it was always, like, obvious that it was going to be gay.
Yeah. Yeah. And, well, you know, and here's the funny part is because it's a little closer to young adult, you know, the gender is irrelevant to the comedy of the romance and the triangle. It in a way, right? Like, if one of these characters was male, it would read exactly the same. I think.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. It's universal. It's not like, oh, it's gay. You know, like these are universal things. These are how teenagers interact with each other. You know, I think at least, I don't know. I this is why I find the bigotry always to be so stupid. Cause I, like, this is how people are. People are like people.
Anyway. Yeah. I think one of the comments that I get a lot, for people who aren't familiar with these characters are they'll see Chloe especially and they'll be like, oh wow, I thought that was a man. Like, I thought right. that was straight up just a boy. And I'm like, right. no, she's just like a butch lesbian. I right. really like butch lesbians. I really like their style. I've always wanted to draw stories with butch lesbians in them. Being myself the farthest away from a butch lesbian. but like, it's also the kind of representation that isn't, there are a lot of masculine presenting and gender non-conforming women in media. Sure. And a lot of people will say that, like, oh my God, there's an over-representation of butches in media. But there really aren't. It's just a bunch of straight women who happen to present more masculinely. Mm-hmm. So I just really wanted, like, there to be proper butch representation. Because again, when you actually do see lesbian representation in media, it is just, this is going to sound weird, two women who look like they could be sisters in a relationship.
Very much so. Yeah. Yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. And I'm saying that as a straight guy too, you know, I mean, yeah. I know exactly the thing that you're talking about there.
Yeah. And I mean, I've met so many lesbian couples who look like they could be sisters. This is not a dig at lesbian. Like that's just a thing that happens. There are heterosexual, sure. Like a lot of people date people who look similar to them. It's just a thing, sure, that happens. But like, yeah, the overwhelming representation of either gay or lesbian characters is just like, there are two feminine women or there are two masculine men and they just so happen to be gay, and that this is, yeah, like the peak representation because this is what, how it's supposed to be like. Right. Like the aspect of like gender nonconforming doesn't usually play a role in it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. What was the thought of making a book that is so unrelentingly pink?
I was given the option of either having it in full color, or having it monochromatic, the way that like either, the examples that I had in mind are like Bloom and Laura Dean Keeps Breaking Up With Me. And also This One Summer as well. And what I was told from like the designer is that if you make it monochromatic, the colors will just be a lot more vibrant. It'll print a lot better. And also, it's just a lot easier to do because I have a color palette. It's five colors and I just keep using them for stuff. And then I was like, oh, what color should this be? I was thinking about, because my original thought, because these characters, the way that I had been drawing them on Instagram at first was they were in their school colors, which were, I believe, blue and orange. And blue and orange is like the classic combo for colors in like, you know, anything. And I was like, oh, if I can make it bichromatic, I'll do blue and orange. But the production guy was like, it'll print better if you do it monochromatic. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, pink is my favorite color, so I'm gonna go with pink. I'm really into like reading and collecting books. And I am extremely shallow about the covers that I pick. And for the most part, I pick covers with like either pastel or like lilac or pink covers. So right. I was like, this is a book that I need to make, that I need to like really proudly display on my shelf. So it's going to be pink. It's going to be the most pink book.
It is. It's literally the most pink book in my entire comic shop right now. but it's, you know, it's used very well. Did you do the coloring yourself or did you have someone else, do it?
No, I did all the coloring.
You did it all yourself. Yeah. Did you test it out first or like once you committed to pink, it was like all in?
I had always committed to pink, but I have like a sort of webcomic. It was published on my Patreon, so it's not like out for people to read, but I had a comic called The Demon of Beausoleil, which is also monochromatic, but it's essentially all black and white, but with a sepia tone filter over it. So it looks very old timey, like Victorian, because that's where it's set in. And that worked out really well. So I had that base to work upon where I could just like go from there and like choose four to five like main colors that I was going to use and play with like value and play with lighting and see like what would make sense for each thing. So I had like the background of making that other comic.
Very good. Okay. That's cool. Do you work purely digitally? Do you work some print, some digital? What's your process?
So I work purely digitally, especially when I'm doing stuff for a publishing house and for an editor, because I do need to show them, especially because the only times when I'm not working digitally is when I'm sketching. And usually I'll just do sketching for character concepts, like very initial character concepts that I don't end up showing to anyone. Sure. I'll just do the character concepts and then I'll translate them onto like the tablet. And then I also do thumbnailing in my my little sketchbook, because mm-hmm. it feels better to me mm-hmm. to like be mm-hmm. writing down the dialogue at the same time as I'm like sketching. But mm-hmm. it turns out that scanning and or taking photos of like hundreds and hundreds of pages of sketchbooks with like thumbnail notes is really hard, and also my handwriting is horrible. So I had to, like, for specifically Belle of the Ball and Forgive Me Not, I had to switch to thumbnailing in digital as well. But when I'm doing when I'm doing comics just for myself, and I don't need to worry about anyone reading my really bad handwriting, then I will just go completely book wild and have like tiny little notes on things, and like use a lot of like abbreviation and stuff that only I can understand. But yeah, for the purpose of like making it easier on everyone, I do mostly digital. And also I work mostly digital, A, because at this point I've gotten used to it. B, art supplies are really expensive. I extremely admire people who can do like, who can ink on paper and who can scan it and who can make like beautiful pieces. Like I had a friend who did their comic entirely in watercolor. It was gorgeous to look at, but I cannot imagine spending that much money. And like, I don't have a scanner. The only thing I have that I can bring with me everywhere that I go to is like my tablet and my pen.
Yeah.
And my laptop. I do need the laptop as well.
Yeah. I've heard some cartoonists talk about how there's something about pen and paper when you're doing layouts, when you're doing your thumbnails, that there's a freedom to it that is
absolutely
right.
Yeah, if I could be doing my layouts, sure. And if it was like, if I like could make them comprehensible, absolutely, I would just do them in pencil. And that's still how I do them for like any project that isn't like for a publishing house. But the only reason I've switched is because it's much more convenient to like send over properly designed layouts and stuff. But I did, at some point I switched out brushes. And I had a brush that was like, that made me do a lot more detail work, and that made me go a lot smaller. Uh-huh. And that's not what layouts are about. Layouts are about like big picture. So I just switched to like a brush that made me like think bigger, essentially.
Yeah. And in the layout stage, I'm assuming that you're spending a lot of your time thinking about the structure of the page. Yeah.
Yes.
How the panels flow together, where the lines of sight are, those kinds of things.
Yeah, I do both. So it's both the structure of the page, and I also write the dialogue at the same time. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because one time I tried to script write first and then mm-hmm. Do the layouts, which is something that works very well for a lot of people. But for me, it ended up being like very dialogue heavy because I love writing dialogue. And also because I didn't have to think about it so much. It was very much like talking head, talking head, talking head, talking head, shot, reverse shot, shot, reverse shot. What are they doing? They're not doing anything. But like when I'm actually actively doing the layout, I have to think about like what the characters are doing as they're talking.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Particularly when we're dealing with the bigger publishers, that's a pretty unusual way of making comics. Because at least talking to the cartoonists that I've talked to so far for the series, most of them are like, "Yeah, no, we got to give them a script and they've got to approve the script." But it sounds like you're giving them a hybrid layout script, which is a neat way of doing it.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I've worked with like a writer before who like gave me like a script and like essentially notes for like what to do on each panel. And that worked fine. But it's like, it also helps me pare down the dialogue a lot, because I'm not a huge fan of like cramming a lot of dialogue into one, like into one page. I think that that's not really the point of comics. The point of comics is more of like the storytelling flow. So generally I will do like 1 to 2 sentences per bubble. And it helps the story flow a lot quicker. And if I start typing out the dialogue, it'll like kind of make me forget that, like, when I put this, when I like type this out into the bubble, it'll look huge and there won't be any room for the character to breathe and do things.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, to me, comics are the art of reduction, of the art of using the least to tell the most. Both from dialogue, from what you said, but also from panels, right? Like how, what you're showing from a thing going to another thing, it's the space in between that is the magic of comics, right? Comics are the gutters. So, you know, if comics are the gutters, then it's about reduction. Something like that, at least.
Yeah.
That might have been too far afield. I'm sorry.
No, yeah, absolutely. I mean, another thing that I'm really grateful for a second, especially to Steve, is that he trusted me enough that when I was giving him my original outline for the story, and my outlines are extremely like direct and very bland, and like they're very clinical. There's not a lot of emotion conveyed on them. It's just like, this happens and then this happens and then this happens and it happens. And then, but like every single time I've ever given him an outline, or I've given him like a scene that I feel like has some emotion to it, I have like in parentheses, like all caps, by the way, when I like draw this, the emotions are going to be conveyed in the characters' faces. So please trust me on this. Like, it's going to be fine. I know that really boring right now.
Right. Was your outline for the same basic 6-chapter structure that you have here?
Yeah.
Very good. So you followed the outline, in other words.
Yes, I did follow the, it was very helpful to have an outline.
Yeah. Again, some people do, some people don't, you know. Okay, let's talk about sort of a little physical process. Maybe you're doing it digitally. Are you doing the layouts? Okay, so there's thumbnails, right, which are just to get an idea of where things are. Then there's the actual layout, which is something that's, you know, what we would traditionally call the penciling stage.
Yes.
Are you doing separate stages like that? Or, because I've talked to a couple of people who literally take their layouts, their thumbnails, and blow them up and then just ink over that.
I don't ink over them. That sounds insane. That sounds like that sounds like a mastery that I don't have. But especially now that they're digital, I do blow up my thumbnails and I start sketching over them. Really helped speed up the process. When I was doing on paper, I would just copy the sketch out into the layout and like change things if I needed to. But like, because there's like a deadline for publishing, it does really help a lot to be able to just like blow up the thumbnail and be able to have like that reference really clear.
And then you're sketching out, and then do you have another pass where you're effectively inking it, finishing the artwork?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So generally it's thumbnail, pencil. Sometimes I'll do a second pencil, but like once I started blowing it up, I didn't, like generally if I'm not blowing it up, I don't do a second pencil. If I'm not blowing it up, I do a second pencil, just to tighten everything up, to make inking like go easier and like not be as wonky. Then I'll do inks, then I'll do, you know, color and shading. And before I do any of like the actual sketching, I will just do the, like, I will just plan out where the gutters are. I will draw out the gutters. I will plan out where the word bubbles are. I will add in the text first because it breaks my heart when I have to like cover drawings up with word bubbles.
Sure.
So I always like to have the bubbles mm-hmm. first, and then mm-hmm, I'll mm-hmm, do mm-hmm. I'll do the actual mm-hmm. drawing.
Yeah. And then coloring as another step as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is just a commercial font you're using as well, right? For the lettering, not one handwriting.
Yeah. For a second gave me like three options for fonts. Okay. And I just chose the one that I liked the best.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. When you were doing your web comics, were you doing the same thing or were you hand lettering?
When I was doing my webcomics, I was hand lettering. I was very proud of it. I thought it was like, I'm putting in so much work. This is like, this looks so good. And then I realized that like there was a section of it that where the letters were like way too small to read on the website. And I'd messed up and there was no way to fix it. And also I realized that it was extremely time consuming. So it's not something that I would do again, but, you know, when you're 18, you can do anything.
Yeah. What about getting a font based on your handwriting?
Yeah, we did something similar for the back copy of Life of Melody, where we found like a fairly similar font for it. Mm-hmm. And going forward, if I ever do any more stuff for either Life of Melody or Perry Tale, that's what I'm gonna be doing. Yeah, I like when I'm actually putting the work in, I do actually kind of like doing my own handwriting. It's like kind of cathartic. It's like really like nice to do. But yeah. It's something that I would probably reserve for like short comics for anthologies or something. It's sure. Also, I have been told this multiple times by the HyperX editor. It sucks for printing. So... It sucks for printing. Don't do it.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can always do it on a separate layer. Oh.
Oh no. It's because handwritten lettering can't like rasterize, so they can't like blow it up or like shrink it down.
I see what you mean. That actually makes a lot of sense. I hadn't thought about that at all. Yeah. Nice. Well, I think I have run out of questions about the book itself. So let's start wrapping this up. I always end with the same thing. The first part is there something you've got coming up that you'd like to plug? Where should people look for more of your work? That kind of thing.
Okay, so all of my social media is under the like Marinsko's umbrella. I don't know if that's linked anywhere, but I've made it very easy to find me. I've used Tumblr, Instagram, and Twitter mostly. I've tried to get a TikTok. It's very hard. I don't know how the teens do it. but I've been trying to do it to promote my work. Bella the Ball is the thing that I've currently have. It's like it came out a month ago, so it's still fresh. You can still please go get it. Please leave a good review. It'd mean the world to me. Forgive Me Not is a little bit down the road. I would say 2025. And like I would like to do more independent comics, but I can't promise anything again because I am working on like Forgive Me Not and stuff like that. I also have been getting into prose writing. So if you like to read books without pictures in them, and I don't know why you would, but I do. I have a book that should be coming out either late 2024 or early 2025 called Shoestring Theory that's been picked up by what is it called? I'm gonna get this wrong. Is it what is the publisher called?
It's okay.
It's called Angry Robot. The publisher is called Angry Robot. That's coming out. It's about a wizard who goes back in time to kill his husband. you know, normal stuff.
Sure.
So that's the things that are essentially guaranteed. And then just like follow my socials, and usually I do a pretty good job at like keeping people updated on when things are coming out. Oh, right. That comic that I mentioned, The Demon of Beausoleil, it is supposedly getting a Hyverix is probably be doing in the middle of this year a Kickstarter to do an actual printed version of it. So I'm very excited and very nervous about that. Kickstarters really stress me out, but hopefully it goes well.
Yeah. Well, are they going to run it? Are you going to run it?
They're going to run it because I do not have the infrastructure to have books in my house. I live in a studio.
That makes it a little easier. So you said Forgive Me Not is 2025. Is that the expectation?
Potentially, yeah. It all depends on like
obviously how, potentially, yeah.
It all depends on like how quickly I can get these. Like the thumbnail is always the hardest part of comics because it's the most thinky part. And then everything else is just like autopilot. So after that, it's just smooth sailing.
How far into it are you? I mean, are the thumbnails done or are you still working through them?
I've just passed the halfway mark on thumbnails. Okay. So, and like each chapter is like fairly small. It's got like, it's got 18 chapters in total, but like each of them ranges around like 12 to 20 pages each. So very different from the format that Bell is in, where like each chapter is like 50 or so pages. So, like because the chapters are so small, every time I finish one, it feels like a big accomplishment, even though I've only drawn like 5-10 pages.
Yeah. No, I love that. I love that. Cool. And actually, this is why I know I forgot to ask you something earlier. How fast do you produce? Are you a page a day when you're in production mode, or slower, more?
So thinking about it in pages is just it's like counter how I work, because I'll do batches. So I'll do a big round of like, for example, when I was doing Bell, I would do all of the layouts for chapter one, and then all of the text for chapter one, and then all of the word balloons for chapter one, and then all of the sketches, and then all of the inks, and then all of the like color, etc. Because it's so much easier to like, instead of like having to restart your mentality from like sketch to color, it's so much easier to just do it in batches. So I wouldn't be able to tell you how long it takes to do a page. I will say when I was doing Perry Tale and I had to do like singular pages, and they were full color pages, I think it would take me maybe like 4 hours on the simpler ones to do.
Okay.
So yeah, a page a day or like one or two pages a day feels like accurate-ish.
Great. No, awesome. And then the last question is I really like this one too. This is a series of interviews, right? You are somewhere, we're really close to 200. This could even be 200. I actually am not counting specifically, but and so a lot of people who want to make comics watch this. And what I hear a lot is, I don't know where to start, or I'm not sure of myself, or my ideas aren't good enough, or you know, all of the things that people say to themselves, right? So if you were talking to a younger you, you know, who wanted to make comics, what would be the piece of advice that you would give? And it could be something physical, it could be something emotional, it could be something spiritual, practical, however you want it to be. But what would that piece of advice that you would give to a young cartoonist be?
Stop it. Go to law school. No, I'm just kidding. I'm joking. Honestly, I feel like I didn't need the motivation to like start making comics. I was just like kind of a feral child who wanted to tell stories as much as possible. But the thing is, if you have a story in your heart and you want to tell it, the most important person that story is going to like, maybe it'll resonate with a million people. Maybe it'll resonate with 5 people. The person that it needs to resonate with is you. So you have a story that you want to tell. You think that it's important that you want to tell it. You just have to start. I've seen people who do like concept art after concept art after concept art of their like comic that they're going to do someday. And it may be beautiful art, but if you don't actually start making the pages, Like some of the best comics that I've ever seen start off with like kind of meh looking artwork. And then the way that you get better at art is just by doing it a lot and learning and like studying things that you like, art styles that you like, drawing from life, etc. Yeah, essentially it's really the Shia LaBeouf, like just do it. You just have to jump in both feet first. Because the only way to get better is to actually do it. Yeah. You're not going to like magically develop comic making skills. This is not a talent that I have. This is just a thing that I got really obsessed with when I was a child.
Yeah. I really like that answer. Did you, just as a complete sidebar, have you ever read any of Shia LaBeouf's comics?
He has comics?
Shia LaBeouf made a number of comics that were not very good, I have to say.
Oh my God.
They're not multiple panels on a page comics. They're one static image on an individual page, but it is comics.
Is it like Homestuck style?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Something like
that. Yeah. Yeah. They're not very good, but yeah, he was trying to sell them for a while and we ended up with a number of them here at the store. It's kind of fun. Anyway,
I bet Shia LaBeouf loved those comics. So
yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You can tell. Cause he was contacting individual comic book stores to go, "Hey, will you carry my comic?" You know, which is not something that you really expect from a movie star, you know? Anyway, I want to thank you for your time today and for spending some time talking about making comics. And I hope you had fun.
I had so much fun. I love doing interviews, honestly.
So if you're looking for a fun book to read, something that you haven't read, if you want some romance, if you want some lesbian romance at that, if you want something that's extraordinarily pink, this is the pinkest book you're ever going to read in your life. And it's really, really funny and it's really, really good. And it's got a lot of joy, a lot of heart, and it's kind of the best of making comics.
Thank you for reading. And thank you for calling it funny. That's the peak. That's what I wanted. So
great. Love it. Love it. I love it. Okay. Well, that's the show then. And we will see you next episode.